Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have another amazing guest. We are celebrating Andrew Lloyd Webber. With Phantom of the Opera set to close on Broadway, I am going to be having a handful of what I'm calling Phantom Cats on the podcast. So my guest today has been performing in Phantom of the Opera, but before that, he was Monkish Trap on the 5th U.S. National Tour and a swing, and then also a swing on the 2016 Broadway revival. So welcome, Tug Watson. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I love this.
I am excited to have you. I think you have a long Cats history, and I'm excited to be able to do this kind of fun collaboration with Phantom, just knowing the parallels with Andrew Lloyd Webber's work. But let's start at the very beginning, and I love to hear your history with the Cats show. I know you're wearing your Cats hoodie. When was the first time you saw it? Did you see it on stage first? Did you see the 1998 movie? What was your first interaction?
Well, I think the first time that I officially had seen it from beginning to end was the movie. But my first interaction with Cats would have been, I was five or six. My family, we were living in Plymouth, England. And my parents took two of my sisters to go see Cats on the West End. But they left myself and my younger sister, who was a baby at that time, with a sitter because they didn't think I would like it, which is hilarious. And for some reason, I knew what the show was, and I knew that I wanted to see it. And then, of course, I just put it in my head, I shall be in this show one day. And I was 5 or 6 years old. And then my sisters became dancers. And I remember watching my twin sister, Erin. For her recital, she danced to Macavity. And I was just insane with jealousy. And it wasn't until, I don't know, 10 or 11 or 12 when I started dancing myself. But in that time frame, yeah, I saw the VHS and was absolutely enamored with it. And then I saw the final cast on Broadway the week before it closed.
Wow. Okay, so how old were your sisters when they took her, when they took them to see the West End?
Erin and I were twins, so she was 5 or 6, and my older sister would have been 9.
Okay, so it wasn't an age like, we don't think it's appropriate for you. They just didn't think you'd enjoy it.
Yeah, it probably was that simple. There was no history of thespians or dancers in either of our families, really. My mom's father taught drama, but in conjunction with teaching English. So there was really no, and my father was a Marine. So there was really no reason why I would grow up to be a musical theater jellicle.
Yeah.
So it was just, you know, you didn't,
I love that.
They didn't bring me.
There's no Jellicle background in the family. So that's kind of, I think, so your family's kind of first interaction was a West End production. And then you finally get to see it on stage. How old are you when you see the original Broadway kind of ending?
16.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this is like, wow. So that's you've now seen you've seen the VHS, you're very aware of what's happening, but now you're in a much more age where you can understand that the Macavity dance is a little more to it. What was that experience like as a 16-year-old?
Oh, it was incredible. I was in New York doing a theater dance summer intensive with a new dance group, and any chance I got, I would go see Broadway shows. And I knew that Cats was closing, and I just had to go see it before it did. So I remember just being in the orchestra at the Winter Garden, and I was really aware that the show had been around longer than I had been alive. So I was treating it with respect. You know, whether it was falling apart or really, really well kept, I don't know that I was paying attention too much to that as much as I was just thinking to myself, I'm watching history right now.
Yeah.
And I remember being completely blown away. I mean, totally blown away. No expectations other than to just kind of go and pay my respects. Cause I, at that point, I certainly knew I was going to pursue theater. And I also was very aware that it was Cats that was my first, introduction to theater.
Yeah.
I knew what it was.
The VHS. Yeah. It is such an interesting thing that when you like, I look back and I talk to, as someone who wasn't like, you know, I wasn't involved in musical theater. I played hockey since I was 3 years old. It is such a show that is so many people's first VHS or first introduction or first performance. Yeah. And it's been around for so long that there's this just like massive history. Uh-huh. So let's fast forward now. You get the tour, you get booked on the tour as Monkey Strap. So what was, you know, like what goes through your mind as that is such your introduction to theater, and then you get the role?
Well, it was, it felt very meant to be. I had a friend of mine from college who ended up going on and playing Rumpelteazer, Joanna Silvers, and then my best friend in the world, Justin Huebner, got cast as Monkastrap on the tour, and I was on tour with Annie. And then Justin and I decided to move to New York together and, you know, give the big city a go. And he had declined to come back for a second year. And we were living together, and I had heard that they were looking for an immediate replacement for Monk, Demeter, and Tugger. Oh, and Alonzo. So I had just read The Secret, and I decided I was going to make room for Cats in my life. So I packed bags and I found a subletter before I even went to the audition. And I had also just gotten over an injury, and I now was feeling, you know, well enough to go and dance again. So I went to the audition, and, you know, there were a couple hundred people there, and I just felt it in my bones that I was going to be on a plane like in 3 days. I knew it. And they called back maybe 10 guys to come sing after we danced, and I was the last one to sing. And I just felt like going all in. And so Kristen Blodgett, the music supervisor of the tour, and Richard Stafford, when I walked into the room, they were just like, "Oh, what are you going to sing?" And I decided I wanted to sing How Glory Goes from Floyd Collins. Totally inappropriate for the show, but the measures are super long in that. And they were only giving us, you know, 32 bars. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to milk this for all I want. 32 bars of How Glory Goes is, you know, roughly an hour long. So I was just going to give it all I could. So I sang that. And then Kristen asked me if I knew anything from the show. And my exact words were, "I know every word of the show." And
what such confidence.
I tell you, I don't think I'm that confident in, you know, all the time, but I just had this feeling. So she came up and conducted in front, like 3 feet from my face, she conducted Old Deuteronomy and Gumby Cat. And then she just, you know, looked at me and smiled, and I think she may have put her hand on mine, and that was that. And I just went back to my place, and I got a call from company management, and I was on a plane 2 days later to Costa Mesa, California.
Wow.
it was wild, but thank God I already had my bags packed and the subletter found. I just I was so ready. I was so ready.
So this is, I think this is an interesting piece, because you're coming in through the tour, right? You're not
right.
Like, it's as a coming in late. How much backstory and prep do they give you? Because I do, like, I've, you know, there's, and in 2016, and there's always, you hear about cat school and you hear about the three words and all the stuff. But when you're coming in halfway through, like, what do they tell you to help drive that kind of persona you need to play the role?
Well, they did, they had like a 3-ring binder with all the cat's pictures in it and a small paragraph of their character description. And the picture was, you know, like that classic Michael Gruber, that, you know, blue ice stare to the camera. I knew that character in and out, but I'm also, I don't know. I was always told I was too short to play the role and not buff enough, but so I had to amp up my, leadership or princely persona, but I was also a replacement. So my rehearsals weren't with the other cats. It was with our dance captains and a couple swings. And, it was really just plugging me into the show. And then throughout that first contract, which I think was only maybe 6 months, is when I really developed my own personal relationships with the other cats on stage. And then I came up with the most ridiculous backstory ever.
And that's what we're here for. That is what this podcast is doing, is I'm slowly documenting the history of everyone's opinion of what their character actually is. So let's start with the tour final. Let's start with Monkus Trap. I want to hear, what is your Monkus Trap's backstory and the relationships you play and the stuff that you kind of created to make this the story live for, you know, the rest of the world that doesn't get to understand it half the time.
All right. Well, I'll start with just a serious little caveat, and that is the source material, you know, the poems, it doesn't provide character descriptions for all of them, and Monkus Trap being one of them.
It gives you very little.
Very little. But I am a staunch defender that the show does have a plot. But it's also subtle, I suppose, in all of its unsubtleties. The plot is subtle. The way to best get through it as an actor is to have and to take very seriously your backstory and your chosen relationships and, you know, the loves and the dislikes that you have with everyone. Whether the audience sees just a dancing spectacle or not, the story and the backstory are very internal. So my very serious backstory for Monkus Trap, and I know I'm going to get read for filth on all the Reddit pages for this. Cats Wiki is not going to like me. The backstory for Monkus Trap is loosely based on the classic tale of Mean Girls. So I sort of took the
where you're going with.
Thank you. I took the conspiracy theory that, you know, old Deuteronomy is king and he has the three sons of Monkus Trap, Tugger, and McCavity, and they're all sort of, you know, the good, the bad, and the hideous appendages of, I don't know, old Deuteronomy or whatever. So Monkus Trap, being the equivalent of the Prince of Wales, is an incoming freshman to Jellicle High. And I should be embarrassed, but I'm not, because I have too much fun.
No,
with
this is
stuff.
Great. This is fantastic.
And Grisabella, Bombalurina, Demeter, and the very cool foreign exchange student Cassandra are a year ahead of Monkus Trap, and they're all abuzz, like, oh, the prince is coming, the crown prince is coming. And they all want, you know, to be in his good graces and maybe be the next princess of Jellicles, all except Grisabella, who, of course, is who Monkus Trap finds most fascinating. She's not giving him the time of day. But he pursues and he pursues and he pursues. And then for Christmas, he decides to give her a gift. And that gift is a mouse fur coat. And then she's like, oh, well, okay, I love you. Thank you for my coat. And he's like, you're welcome. We are now betrothed. So all is happening in preps for the wedding. And then at the engagement party, Monk's youngest brother, McCavity, he's like, hey, Grizz, let's go outside. Let's have a chat. Maybe have a smoke. I don't know. And they run away together and leaving Monkastrap single and devastated. And the kingdom is all uproared like, oh, no, what's poor freshman Monk going to do? Tell me if this is too.
No, keep going. I'm following along. I got okay. A giant grin on my face.
Okay, good. So years later, as Monkastrap is becoming heir to the throne and old Deuteronomy's training him to, you know, host the ball, Monk gets a call from an unknown number, and it is a very shaky-voiced Grizabella. And she's like, I can't make it to the ball this year, but I do have a kitten, and he is your nephew to McCavity's son. His name is Tumble Brutus. Will you please take him and raise him to be good, not like his father? And Monkastrap says, sure, but you can't come. No one will want you there. So he invites Tumble Brutus, who's all full of, you know, bad energy, but a lot of fun and super cute. And that's what brings us to the ball. And then she decides she needs to give it one more go with her tribe. She walks into my ball and she has the nerve to be wearing the mouse fur coat. And that's my backstory. And I said that to Kristen and to Richard after our after rehearsals for my second year, and they asked me, what are you thinking here? What your relationship with Grizabella, what is it? It seems very unique. And I told them that. And they just stared at me completely deadpan, and I said, okay, thanks, bye.
So not validating your story by any means.
No, the only people who validated it were, you know, my cast members who all, you know, I had ridiculous backstories for all of them. So, hey,
all right. I have a few follow-up questions, and then I kind of sure. hear a few more of these. Cause that was,
and yes,
that was
I have,
great.
I do have backstories for my characters in Phantom as well.
Well, we're going to get to that. We'll get to Phantom in a little bit. Okay. So first of all, I love the Mean Girls reference because I have called Grizabella leaving the tribe, her parallels to like the bald Brittany and Lindsay Lohan's kind of like,
oh, totally
from Grace before they, you know, yeah. Brittany's made her come back. I don't think Lindsay Lohan's fully made her come back. So I do kind of find that Mean Girls parallel in your, like in your example, are you like Aaron Samuels as Monkastrap, or are you just also in the Mean Girls school?
I think the Mean Girls reference really was just Grizabella and Baum and Demeter. That's the only Mean Girls. So I'm imagining them as, you know, the girls and Mean Girls.
They're the three Mean Girls.
And then Monk is just, I guess I'm imagining him as Prince William, you know, the early years.
Okay. So here's how we're going to do this next part then.
Okay.
Cause I want to hear more of more of your backstories for everyone else. But I like to hear him in a burn book style. So give me the backstory, and then what you would write in the burn book about the other cast members that you have these backstories with.
Oh gosh. Okay. About which one?
Who do you have the? I mean, I don't know how many you have. Like, there's. I like hearing about. We can go through like just the song cats. It's probably the easiest. So
well, they're none Jenny, of them. Tugger. You should know none of them are as deep as the monk as stories.
Well, but, I mean, are your backstories more as playing them with Monk, or is it as if you were doing them?
I think that story was really just for my own entertainment, and to kind of in my head solidify who Grizz is to Monk. So
yeah, that makes sense. I think you have to, right?
Yeah, like
you have, because there's not enough like lyrics and writing to your point.
No.
The poems don't have the stuff, and you know a little bit about like, all right, there's a couple for sure things that are happening, but you have to fill in the blanks. And you know, I've had conversations with Grizabella's of like, do you play Victoria as your daughter or not? And you know, and vice right. versa, and like little things like that. And you get different answers. And I've had different answers from two different casts and cast members who played it totally different, but really also the same. You know, it's like they just didn't, because it's not spoken, so you can kind of have some of that, and that's the beauty of it.
So you do the staging and you do, you know, the choreography, but what is up to the performer is, of course, how you emote it and how you react to them. So I suppose that my story would be completely different if the actress who was Grisabella was significantly older than me, and that she may have been a more maternal character. But Anastasia Lang, who played my Grisabella when I first joined, she and I were also roommates on the tour, and also I was roommates with our Tumble Brutus. So maybe that's why they're so involved in my stories. But Anna was, she's my age. She is impossibly chic and very, very beautiful. So it was easy for me to sort of give her, I suppose, a characterization of my peer. So I let that evolve into maybe a love interest. Mm-hmm. And that's just sort of where it went. And on these bus and truck tours, you guys are all, you know, living together in very, very tight quarters, and you learn to just laugh at anything and everything. And story time with Tug about backstories of the Jellicles was a big part of our tour. And and so that's sort of where my story with Grizz came in. And it was really, I think, just because of who was playing her. And that moment that Monk and Grizz have when she first enters and he, you know, blocks off the kittens from touching her. And why is she so dangerous? Is she dangerous just to them, or is she also dangerous to Monk? And why is she dangerous to Monk? Because she broke his heart.
I love it. So story time with Tug is fantastic. I love that you're just, I can imagine you in the back of the bus with her, or even just, you know, in a hotel lobby with everyone gathered around, and you're, it feels very more Gus for uh-huh. you know, which uh-huh. I know you did later, and just telling different backstories like that, which is honestly where I'm at now with, you know, 90 to 100 episodes of this show, where we're just purely talking about trying to figure out the backstories, because it doesn't, you know, it's hard. I want to hear your backstories for, I know you in 2016, you got to swing and you did Bus for Jones and Gut, you did that kind of Bus Gus track. What were your backstories for the two of them?
Well, I had started, I was a vacation swing for the revival. And when I first got that offer, it was just for a few weeks over the holidays and New Year as a singing in the Cats chorus with no covering. And then I came back to the show in October of 2017 as Cats Chorus as well, and they were rehearsing me for Gus and Old Deuteronomy. I was living in San Diego at the time. I was doing my MFA, so I was flying across the country to go do Cats. And stepping into it just as Cats Chorus was sort of perfect, because I knew the music. They didn't really need to rehearse me. And, you know, I got the credit, and it was so dreamy just to be able to sit in the pit and watch Kristen Blodgett or William Waldrop conduct. And, you know, I have my Broadway credit. But then when I came and they asked me to cover Gus and Duke, I wasn't overwhelmed. I was very well rehearsed and felt very prepared. But it was magical. And they did give me the three words, and I, shame on me, the only one I really remember for Gus was like intuitive. And that spoke to me because, like I said, 100 years ago when I auditioned for the show, I knew I was going to get it. And when I auditioned for the Broadway revival, I felt in my bones that I was going to get this too. And I had imagined it. When I was on stage as Monk, you know, on the tour, I was like, I can see the theater before me now. This is going to happen. So when I started rehearsing Gus, I just took in all of these, I guess, intuitive visions that I had and all these like dreamy things that I would, I suppose, use as part of my gestural vocabulary when I was singing, you know, Gus's solo before he went into Peaks and the Pollicles. Just, I would see everything in front of me. So almost like, here is Gus, this actor with memories, but also here is a cat with magical powers, and almost able to see the future and the past and past lives. So Gus was, to me, very, you know, Old Deuteronomy isn't the only one with visions, as far as I thought, in that moment when I was rehearsing Gus. I was rehearsing with Nathaniel Stampley, who was going in for Old Deuteronomy. So I got less rehearsal time as Dute and much, much more for Gus. So I was really, you know, thinking about all of, you know, how would I play this? What did this show look like? You know, all the shows that he had done and how much do I miss the past? And what I kept thinking about as how much I miss the past was playing Monka Strap and being much younger and much more agile and, you know, doing theater in small towns and old opera houses across the country and how much I missed that. And so that's all that I was sort of singing about as Gus.
That's kind of fun. You know, like you're early in your career still at that point, and then you know, mm-hmm. at this point still. And you're to play the, you know, the Gus part, you need to have that. So you look back on the,
right.
you know, what you can look back on and the memory that I do. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Thanks.
That is, okay. That's kind of fascinating that, you know, again, you're kind of coming in midway. I want to, before we pivot to a next topic though, I do want to hear, what are some of the other, when you did Storytime with Tug, what are some of the other like fun stories that you came up with? Like, what's one that you don't think most people are going to say, oh, this was like, there's some, you know, there's the obvious stuff that most of the Cats fan Wikipedia is written about. And there's a bunch that like
right.
people assume is truth. What's some of the stuff that you came up with that people would be surprised by?
Trying to think of a good one. I'd say that probably, Alonzo and Monka Strap have chemistry.
What kind of chemistry?
Romantic chemistry.
Okay.
Not necessarily.
I don't think that one's very, very well spoken about. So this
well,
is...
I only think about that. It's not going to be well spoken about. I'm not going to speak well about it, or clearly, I suppose. But I came up with that one because, when I was a swing on my third year of that tour, I went on for Alonzo a few times, and the way I kept looking at Monka Strap and trying to save him from a cavity and trying to, you know, be behind him and, you know, be his, you know, right-hand man was kind of how, you know, I may have done to people I had a crush on. Just like, oh, see, I can be here too. Pay attention to me. I'm here for you. I love you. So it was...
It's so interesting to hear how you come up with these things based on, because you're looking at the character that you played for so long
uh-huh.
and you're like, all right, I know it's coming. I know that backstory. I've already written that one in detail.
And now you're seeing it from another,
Now you're seeing it from another lens and you're like, oh, I got to protect him. And now all of a sudden there's this romantic interest that wasn't there before.
Right.
It is so interesting how some of that comes up. And then that's how these things swirl. And that's how the fan fiction gets written.
Yeah. Oh, the fan fiction. I love the fan fiction. The stories that I kind of had about Syllabub and Cassandra are kind of based on some fan fiction that I read, and they are, and that those characters with Porcupat and Tantamile are like otherworldly, you know, more moon dust than they are, you know, earthly flesh. To me, that just explains all of those, you know, witchy moments where, you know, Cassandra stands up and then Syllabub starts to sing, you know, Moonlight. It's so I just kind of alien. I don't know, people with crystals in their homes. That's where those cats live. And I love
it. Sounds like you need to write some fan fiction.
Oh my gosh. I could.
Okay. Well, one more question, then we're going to go to the next topic. What is your favorite backstory that you wrote? Like, what's the one that's like, I'm most passionate about? Like, taking out Monk, because I know that that's your the one that you created. But what's the one where you're like, I will argue to the death about this one?
Grizz.
Okay. Well, that's not good for this podcast. But if that's the case, then we'll get to it at the end. If Grizz being the delicate choice is you're going to fight to the death, that will be the last.
No. That's not what you asked.
Okay.
So you asked what my favorite backstory is.
Okay, so let's hear Grizz's backstory then. Maybe this will help my argument.
Well, it's very in line with Monka Straps, of course. But I love the characters in some Andrew Lloyd Webber musicals of female characters with a heart of gold, and they're, you know, completely misunderstood. You know, like Mary Magdalene, and I just love that archetypal character. So Grisabella, she may have made some mistakes, but she still has all this love and a want to be around others that feel love but then there's rejection so her backstory after she leaves her engagement party with Munkastrap is she lives this life of squalor, going from fire escape to fire escape and all across London, and somehow I see her in New York City as well, and getting lost in opium dens, and then somehow there's this Tumble Brutus character in her life, which just makes her back up to sobriety and back home to those that she loves, and then she dies when she gets what she wants. It's just so tragic. I love it.
How the marriage, like the engagement party, is that a tug story special, or is that like well thought about? Because I don't think I've ever figured that was part of it with the her leaving as an engagement party. That all happens before we even come on stage.
Yeah. That's exposition, and it really was just my own ridiculous concoction. It is not in any of the binders.
Yeah. The giving the mouse is part of the, like, that's all before.
Well, I thought about it because I always wondered why she was wearing a fur coat and, you know, no one else was wearing a coat quite like that. I know that, you know, Tugger wears his thing and Rumpelteazer wears garters and tights for some reason, but I was so fascinated with this beautiful mouse fur coat. And I don't even know if it's mouse, but it just makes sense because they're cats. Of course it would be a mouse. And that's just sort of where I went with it. It fascinated me.
I love it. I do think there's something I've talked about a little bit is the year before is Jellicle Ball and the year after is Jellicle Ball. Cause we only, and I like that you have an entire engagement party happening before this year's Jellicle Ball. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about last year's Jellicle Ball? Like, who's as Munkastrap? Who's the choice? Who's, like, how is that happening? How's that working?
I think the year before, Munkastrap was much more of a novice. Okay. Maybe still a teenager cat. And it was really still old Deuteronomy's party. And there was, you know, whispers of whose years is going to be and what role is Munkastrap? Why is he making the speech and the toast and not old Deuteronomy? I think those who went, or the one that went before, was probably one of old Deuteronomy's many wives.
Oh, interesting. One of his 99 plus wives.
Yeah.
So he basically just, so 99. Then does he have, is he and Grisabella, do they have any history? Like, is he just kicking off his wife every year? Like, this seems like a much more problematic story if this is the trend.
Well, I think the reason why this story is the one that's put on stage is because perhaps the one who went to the Heaviside Layer is not one of the 99 wives of old Deuteronomy.
So
making it unique.
Because he's basically serial killing his ex-wives or his current wives up until this point. And we get to see the one because he breaks the, this is his,
this that is such a defense. Dark conspiracy theory.
This is his defense for why he's not a serial killer. Is we get to see one where he has a happy story.
He's the one who called Grizz and asked, "Hey, can you come this year and be a decoy for me?"
Yes, that's it. That is it. It's this is fascinating. The other thing I have a question for you is I struggle with the Jellicle timeline. So if you're getting engaged as a teenager to Grisabella, how long is she leaving? Like, is it a year? Is she gone for 10 years? Like, what's her dark path with McCavity? How long is that?
I guess the question would be, what's a year to a cat? Because, you know, they're a kitten one day and then 6 weeks later, they're like a teenager. So what's a Jellicle year? Is it one every calendar year or one every other month? So I think in a timeline, in a cat's timeline, I would say 10 years. She's gone 10 years.
Okay.
but so to the humans, time, humans probably a year and a half.
Yeah, that's like your flight between Costa Mesa and wherever you're going next, right?
So much happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll be back for more of this Catastrophe after a short break.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
But I do want to talk about Phantom.
Okay.
So I want to hear a little bit from you. One is, I mean, I just saw the show. It's phenomenal. I'm one of the few people that hadn't seen over 30 years, however long. 35 years on Broadway. So I'd love to hear a little bit about, you know, when you got cast in it, the, you know, you talked a little bit about this earlier, but about the parallels of being in, you know, another Andrew Lloyd Webber show, and then you tease, so I want to hear your backstory.
What was the first thing you wanted to hear about?
Just about when the parallels you saw between doing multiple Andrew Lloyd Webber shows.
Sure. So a lot of this, I give a lot of credit to Chris and Bodget again. So I did the Cats tour, and then I was in the tour of the revival of Evita as a swing, and she oversaw that as well. And then when I was finishing up grad school, she had asked me to come to New York and audition for the world tour of Phantom. And I had that feeling, I think I'm going to get this. And I was cast first in the world tour.
Did you say you knew every word again?
I did not. No, okay. But I did. I had my audition packet, you know, very coached and down. I was ready. And I was cast as an ensemble member and to understudy the Phantom and Andre. And I was cast pretty much like just outside of the room. I did the audition, did the callback, and then I spoke with the casting director outside the room, and I said to her, you know, I'll do anything you want. I'll go on the tour, but I really do want to be at the Majestic one day. And you know, that was just me kind of putting things out into the universe. And then, I got the call from, Seth Sklar-Hein, the production supervisor for, the Broadway company. And he and I worked together on the Vita tour as well. And he said, listen, I saw your tape. We have an open for a Vacation Swing. Do you want to do it? It's, you know, X amount of weeks. And I just thought, well, that's good because I got an apartment already in New York and I don't have a job. So I need to, have a job. And I was so happy. I was so, so excited. And I was playing Monsieur Rayet for a number of weeks, and then that turned into more and more weeks, and I ended up not doing the tour, because I stayed in New York. And, the parallels to doing, you know, an Andrew Lloyd Webber show, well, I don't know that I can speak so much to the similarities, because all those three big shows that I've done, they're so different. You can't really compare them stylistically speaking. But personally, I mean, it was Cats and it was Phantom as part of my those formative years for me growing up, you know, listening to CDs and tapes of, you know, musicals. So I knew the music as well as, you know, as well as anyone else who just listens to things on repeat. So
they're such vastly different shows. Like that's
vastly, vastly different.
I usually try to compare Cats to the characters, and I spent a lot of time looking at this one, and I struggled. I struggled to like match them, because usually you can tie personality types to most of the characters, and I've done it with a bunch of different, you know, other Broadway shows and other TV shows and other stuff, and I really struggled with this one. There's just not. I mean, I think the closest I got was the Phantom of the Opera and McCavity. It's kind of both have the same kind of feel of like being ominous and dark, but then it's also not, because McCavity gives much more of a villain vibe than the Phantom for me. So I'd ask you that question, and I just couldn't come up with enough of them myself to even feel comfortable doing it.
I don't know. I mean, Victoria and Christine, you know, or Ray A, who I'm playing tonight, and Skimbleshanks just being really persnickety and, you know, fast paced and organized to a fault. I don't know. If I ever went on as McCavity, I would probably make the mistake of like internalizing, you know, why is he so evil? Is he misunderstood like the Phantom? That's not how you should play McCavity. I think really just the experience of doing these shows has just been something I'm very, I get emotional about, because I loved them growing up, and now they've become, the biggest part of my professional career. So I'm eternally grateful, and I'm also still really happy. I love doing them. I genuinely love doing those shows.
That makes it better, right? You know, I have heard, as I've talked to cast members that have done all these different various productions, there are people that have loved Cats and were in Cats, and you know, they were deep into it. And there are others that it was a job for them, and they enjoyed it because it was a job and they worked with good people, but it wasn't their favorite show, and they, you know, they wanted their paycheck. And I, you know, that's part of the job,
that's,
you know,
part of the gig
that you kind of have.
And it is a job, and that's what you have to, you know, think of first, like come to work, do it well. And if you love the job, I mean, that's of course a huge benefit, but it's also, I think it's extremely important to try to find out why you love them, you know, or what you love about them. And Cats, I don't think anyone can really understand the show, no matter how big of a fan you are, until you are in it and you are embodying these characters, because, you know, you're making such connections with people on stage, not to say that you're, you know, rubbing around a sweaty body, that, you know, that's very intimate, but the actual, these ridiculous backstories I told you they actually provided very, you know, real emotional connections I had with the other performers on stage. And Phantom, you know, the ensemble, they all have these great little feature parts. And, you know, I love all the parts that I cover, but it doesn't provide that same ensemble camaraderie that Cats is structured to do for the actor.
Yeah. And it seems like it's very intentionally done that way. You know, you have the twins looking ahead, like there's a lot of the who's going to do what here, like it is. And then, you know, the ball, you're all on top of each other for 13 minutes or 12 minutes or whatever it is. So you're kind of forced to do that.
It's very vulnerable and exhausting, and that's so fun.
Yeah. But it's a show that's, because of, you know, you said it, there is a plot line, there is a through line, there is a piece to it, but because it's not spoken to you directly, like a lot of things, like that's what the new movie tried to do. The 2019 movie tried to add the plot line in for the average person that hasn't seen it. And that, because it's not there, it gives you, like, you have to do those little things around, or it honestly doesn't make sense in some cases.
Right. Yeah. So, of course. Yeah. It's to some people, it really is just a dance recital with adults and unitards.
Yeah. And that's why there's such Cats haters out there, is because there's some people that haven't thought about it, went and saw it, didn't really, you know, just followed a little bit along and then said, what did I see, and walked out. And the reason I know this is because I have asked I've been dying to get somebody on the show that has a thoughtful hate for the show. And I cannot find a single person, because everybody I talk to that hates it, I say, well, tell me what you don't like about it. And they're just like, I just didn't like it. Not my cup of tea. You know, it's like, there's not anybody with a thoughtful reason of why they don't enjoy it. And that has made it, you know, kind of hard. It's an easy punchline. which is honestly how this started, because it was a punchline that started it, and you know, it's kind of taken off. But nobody really has given a, well, I didn't like this, because of that. It's like, you just don't like the idea, and that's it. And that's okay. Theater, you know, everything's not going to be for everybody.
No, I mean, it's the kind of theater I'm most interested in as an audience member is anything that's polarizing. You know, if I hear a passionate love for something or a passionate hate for something, I'm buying a ticket.
Yeah.
You know, because I that immediately puts me in the middle, and you know, I love watching the theater of politics with why is something good and why is something bad and why should we hate it or ban it or cancel it. And there are all these arguments about Cats, but you're right. I've not heard anything that's like truly thoughtful. It's just,
I love that. Yeah. So I'm the same way. I don't want to, at the time of recording this, people can maybe figure it out, but I'm not going to say what it was. But there was a show with a little bit of controversy recently, and between a performer and some of the decisions. And I will tell you, I bought tickets the next day, and I was not planning on seeing the show. So I do think it also does lend to, there is some like, not, I don't want to say benefit of it, because I don't think that like anybody's trying to spark, I don't think it's, they're doing controversy just to controversy. I think the sports world does that. It definitely, I'm with you. I was not going to see that show, and I did immediately after I saw that, because I was like, well, let's see what the fuss is all about.
I agree. It's exciting, and it puts me in a mood to be discerning, but also always open to enjoying it, you know?
I want to hear your Phantom backstory.
Okay. So we've got some really loyal and wonderful fans with Phantom, and, you know, similar to, Cats fans. They are repeat attenders. And there's this one who, really, really likes The Auctioneer and Monsieur Reyes. And I don't mind having, an Instagram connection, a relationship with people. If they're reaching out and they just love the show, or they just want to thank me, or they want to, you know, ask my opinion on something, I'm happy to engage. So this is what I wrote about Monsieur Reyes. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. I started it out with, the secret is in his tilted hat. I imagine him living alone in his late mother's flat, pretending he is actually La Carlotta, and he only wears vintage kimonos and costume tiaras from the opera populaire whenever he's at home doing the dishes, etc., etc. He only drinks floral forward liqueurs and legally changed his first name to Monsieur. He performs in drag one time a year to sold out crowds of queer Parisian cognoscenti. So that's how I play Monsieur Reyes.
I love that not only that's what you wrote, but that you wrote that back to a fan. Like, that it was just like, someone sent you a DM with, what are you thinking? And that is your response.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't how I play it outwardly. Of course, he's very much like Skimbleshanks. He's got a job to do, and he's very high strung, but no one is just as they are at work. You know, when they go home, they're a completely different person. So I have to not judge him as being rather a tyrant, as Monsieur Lefebvre says.
You're right.
Just a tyrant.
there was a lot of like memes and social media jokes about people during the pandemic when they were stuck at home, and you heard your significant other or your roommate's work voice, you know, like when they're on a conference call. And so I love that you have your work auctioneer, Mr. A, and then you have your, here's what he's doing after.
Right. It's just fun for me, but I also, because I joke about it so much, you know, when someone tells a lie long enough that it becomes sort of truth to them.
Yes.
That's how these backstories have affected me. I come up with these ridiculous little things. I'll say them to, you know, two or three people to include a fan. And it just becomes truth. That's that, you know. I mean, this particular fan has taken the liking to me because I am also a very outspoken queer individual, and this person and their partner sees, I guess, representation of themselves through Monsieur Reyes. And it just breaks my heart in the best of ways when they told me this, because, you know, I'm not just doing this to, you know, elevate myself or just be as gay as possible on stage. I am doing this because, hey, I love, you know, these characters, but it's also, I'm very aware that there are people in the audience who are, here to be moved in a way. And if that ridiculous little character translated into something significant to these fans, then that's just beautiful to me.
Yeah. And it's such a true part. It's a part of why I've argued that I think Cats and Phantom, probably for both of them, have run for so long, is that there's probably a cat for everybody. You know, there's a personality that you can relate to.
Yeah.
And that makes it to where it's like, oh, I could see a little bit of me in there, and I could see somebody that I would maybe want to be, or I'd be friends with. And I think that's what some of the fun of that show. And so it's cool as a performer to be able to, for you to be able to kind of like experience that on the stage. You know, like we're in the audience kind of experiencing, but for you to kind of give that moment to somebody is really cool.
Right. But I think what you just said about Cats, that's what makes Cats a home run. And it's inarguable, is that these are not human characters. There's really no spoken word, and yet human beings see themselves in a cat character.
Mm-hmm.
And
completely,
you know, if you can't put your finger on it as to exactly why, well, that just has to be good enough, because that feeling is something quite ineffable. And period. End of story.
Period.
You know?
Period. Well, let's do a quick rapid fire here to kind of close out the show before we get to the million-dollar question.
Okay.
So if you could go, I know you got to play a lot of different cats, but if you could go on for one night, anybody, any cat, whether you're, you know, male, female, could do it, can't do it, who would you want to play for one night?
Well, I think, you know, it has to be Bum Ballerina.
Want to do it. Got it. Want to do the sexy McCavity song.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Love without it. The baggage that Demeter has.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Who are your favorite and least favorite cats?
My favorite cats, I'd say, are the twins. I played Corcopat in a regional production of Cats before I did the tour. And I am a twin to a twin sister myself. So, and I think I'm a bit witchy.
You can relate.
I can relate. I'm a bit witchy like that as well. So, you know, I relate to those characters on many levels. And my least favorite cat, I think has to be McCavity, simply because I don't like the, specialty costume. I think it's unflattering.
Oh, I was going to say because it broke up your marriage.
No, it's good. It's good drama, but a bad costume is unforgivable to me.
Okay. What's your favorite song in the show?
In Cats?
Yes. In Cats.
The Ball.
The Ball. It's yeah. I mean, how can you argue against that?
Yeah, the Warsaw section just makes me almost cry.
If here's my crossover one. If one of the cats was to haunt a theater, which one do you think would be best at it?
Well, I don't think Gus would be the best at it. I think he would be a little too, you know, obvious. He'd be like, oh, hello, how are you?
Yeah.
Don't mind me, I'm just a cat. So maybe not Gus. Best to haunt the theater. Probably Jenny Anydots, because people would be walking around being like, there's that tap dancing chorus girl again. And people are looking for a chorus girl, but really it's just a tap dancing cat. So they're looking in all the wrong places.
Ooh,
which Jenny,
that's a good answer.
You know, probably gets a kick out of. I'm telling you, I can come up with these.
I thought the twins are already a little terrifying.
They are, but so I think they've passed on.
That's fair. Okay. The other one I was thinking about, which I think Tugger doing it would just be fun, but I don't think that would be the best. I do think there's like a little bit of a weird Buster for Jones version of it, where he's like, you know, leave me my box seat. Like, there's some stuff where I'm like,
yes,
he's definitely going to be particular about some of these things.
Oh, that's smart. Yeah.
But okay.
I don't know that he has the wherewithal to you know, haunt. I don't even know that he would know that he is haunting.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be physically capable to go into all the places that Phantom does in that show. You know, all over the place. I was like, Buster's gonna just be in that box the whole time.
Yeah, he probably thinks he's still alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. $1 million question. We've got a deep Grizabella backstory. Okay. Do you think she is the right Jellicle choice this year? Or do you think Old Deuteronomy should have killed a different wife or somebody else?
For the sake of it being a piece of, you know, entertainment, sure, she's probably the best, or not entertainment, like thoughtful, I suppose, entertainment with, you know, a character with an arc. But I also think there is something very, and I've thought this for a long time, and it is just a funny little backstory I'm saving for you. There is something very British music hall and vaudevillian about the entire show. And I thought one time on stage, oh, how funny would it be since we've engaged the audience by inviting them to our ball or to watch us dance or even telling them what a Jellicle cat is. We've let them in on all these things. Why don't we invite them to have some autonomy here? Who do they want to see go to the Heaviside Lair? And we Edwin Drood the show, and we just have them put it to a vote.
I am so glad you said that, because that has been my original thesis from day one.
No, really?
Yeah, my original thesis from day one has been, I saw Leona Lewis originally in 2016. Uh-huh. So I thought I'd watch The X Factor, and that's voted on by the fans. And so uh-huh. I voted as a fan who I wanted. But I think the same thing, you could have...
That's what you meant. I've listened to you say, you talk about the Leona Lewis
story.
So yeah, okay.
That is where mine comes from, is I want, same thing, I want fan-voted, not just America, the world votes.
Yeah.
And votes. And I have gone even further. I think you can do this on tour, where you have multiple stops in a day, where you vote on, let's say you start on Monday in a place, or Tuesday in a place, you vote on Tuesday, and then that character's not eligible the next day. And then you vote again, and you just kill like six cats in the city.
But do we do more than just one vote like they do in Drood? You know, is it who dies, who's the lover, who's the killer, or something like that?
Oh, yeah, that could be
interesting. And it's a different show every night.
I think you could. I mean, the fact that there's, at least in the Broadway Revival, there's like 30 plus of you, right? Like there's a lot of things you could do with that, because there, you know, I mean, there's so many backstories you've talked about. Like you could say, is it Monk's going to take over? Is there like all these other things you could ask? Like you could have a lot there.
Right.
I think you could have who, I don't know. There's just endless, but I do agree. Like it's, cause to me the actual arc is everyone's presenting their best self for why they should be chosen.
Right.
And so it does feel like a singing competition, and that's why the audience should vote. And I think you could rig it up very easily.
That's so fun. Yeah.
Have buzzers in there. So,
but okay, I also think it shouldn't be a cat who, you know, has already had like a complete nine life experience. Like if we're talking reincarnation here, you know, you come back to improve what you've already, you know, done in your previous lives and make it the ultimate life. So it shouldn't be someone who's, you know, very, the whole point of going to the Heaviside Lair is to come back as a new life, right? So it shouldn't be someone who is very clearly wise beyond their years or happy and content. It should be someone with a little bit more to improve upon. So
you're the first person that's tackled this the same way I did, which is what I love. Because you're basically saying most people argue who has had the most fulfilled life, and this is why it's their turn. That's why it's Grisabella.
No, they're done.
You're saying I want to vote who has the longest potential career arc. Because if I'm Simon Cowell, I'm going to try to sign them later,
right?
Onto my label, and so I want someone who's got years of performance left. And my argument was that X Factor usually made groups, and if you look at One Direction, Fifth Harmony, all these other groups that have turned into your point, like. They break up, and now you got another section of Harry Styles and the career arc. But I put Tugger and Mustafi together because they've got – that's my vote. That was my vote from day one.
Right.
So who would be your vote if you are voting, let's just say, on, you know, a normal day performance? Because I think part of what your point is who delivered that night the best as well, knowing that it's going to be different every night. But if you were voting as a Edwin Drood style, X Factor style – mm-hmm. One night, who's getting your vote?
McCavity
finally getting his vote.
Yeah, we need him to stop terrorizing. He needs to come back and do better.
Yeah. So you're saying it's like he's had a rough life.
Yeah.
Like this will be an improvement. It's not a reward. Yeah. It's almost a punishment because we need him to come back better.
No, I wouldn't say a punishment because he is still a Jellicle. And I want to say that family has unconditional love. So without it being a killing, you know, of someone, it is more a, you need to sit down, sir, and think about some things and then come back when you're ready.
What does it say about Old Deuteronomy if with your theory that every previous one was killing one of his wives?
That's not my theory.
You need to be better.
That's not...
I'm sending each one of you every year until I finally choose Grisbeth.
Oh, it's not my true theory. It's just a funny little backstory based on those conspiracy theories, you know?
Yeah, it could be a theory.
Well, I think I would say Old Deut is not eligible in my production. Or in my world of cats, because he's already done it. He's good to go. You know, he's had good lives. He's had worse lives. This is his best life. He's the king of the Jellicles. He's good. You know, that's sort of why Grizz is up on she's up for consideration. McCavity. I don't think the twins or Cassandra should do it because they are good to go. They've had their good life too. So I don't know.
I mean, it doesn't matter what you think anymore. It's going to be an audience vote.
Yeah, exactly. It could be, Mungo Jerry going up and, that would be a huge production number.
That was, the one song I had stuck in my head the first time I saw it for like a week was Mungo Jerry and Rumple Teaser.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again. Cause it's repetition. They just say the name over and over and over again.
I'm so happy I never covered those parts. It was so difficult.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, totally. so incredibly difficult, but I'm also not negating the singers in the Cats chorus, as being eligible to go to the Heaviside Layer as well, because they are still part of the company and they do cover these cats but they are without a body. So maybe bring them back as a kitten.
I love it. Adding even more potential to this.
I'm very fair, you see.
I have, this has been a blast. So many theories that I hadn't thought about, backstories I love. This has been great. Clearly you're responding to DMs. So how can people stay in touch with you on social media? And this will come out right around the end of Phantom. So, will be the end of a historic run for the show. But how can people stay in touch with you?
My Instagram is Aunt Tug, AUNT_Tug.
Aunt Tug, I love it. There'll be story time with Tug coming up eventually.
And anyone is welcome to reach out and ask for a funny little story. Why not?
I think that could be your TikTok if you need another thing to kind of to build on is story time with Tug on TikTok.
TikTok that sounds so stressful to me. It's so time consuming. I know.
It's a lot. But yeah, I'm now a consumer and flight user of it for this podcast.
Thank you so much.
Well, this has been incredible. So thank you for coming on.
Thanks for indulging me. It's fun to revisit these little things.
Awesome.
And to talk about my favorite shows. So yeah, I appreciate it.
So glad to have you. And thanks everyone else for listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.